Yeah.
That's here the familiar sound of success.
Again. Episode 10 of The Center Ring. Coming at your face. Live pre-recorded from an undisclosed location. I am Tim. The gentleman across the table from me is Brandon. Brandon, how are you today?
Other than feeling like I need to drink a gallon of water in this studio, great.
It is a very, very dry studio. I don't know what it is. I brought two water bottles with me, and I'm already through one, so we'll see how we last for this hour-long show. Welcome back to TCR, or welcome if this is your first time about. This is episode 10, double digits. We've hit it. We did it, Mom. No one said we could, but here we are for the 10th time.
I mean, if you really think about it, this is like 20 weeks in, because we're supposed to be a bi-weekly show.
Yes. We started this with the expectations of getting one every other week, and we were like, how the hell can we talk about esports once a week? And how, like, maybe 30 minutes? I don't know. We'll see what happens. So really, we're just, I mean, this is money in the bank. Like, we can go on vacation whenever we want, because we are way ahead of schedule for what our expectations were. But, I mean, there's just something to talk about every week in esports, especially in Counter-Strike, which is kind of our main squeeze, really, just because that's what we watch more.
That's what we play.
And on this episode, there's really no difference in that. Of course, we will always end the show with the micro, your favorite segment of little stories that we just don't have the time for. I mean, we don't have all day. We also have lives that we have to get paid for, so.
And let's face it, nobody really wants to listen to 2 hours.
Right. So that's what the micro's for. We will, you know, maybe talk a little about San Jose IEM. I heard that went down, so we will discuss that, the results and everything. We actually have a very special guest on the show for you. That's Jason Baker, or you may know him as Alchemist. He has done a lot in esports, really, from the get-go. A lot of the production that you see today could very well have been inspired by him and his team.
We've got great history. Like, if you did not know of Counter-Strike before 1.6, we have an amazing history lesson for you in store.
Yep, so that is on its way. We'll talk a little bit about IEM production, because I felt like that was on point. Probably the best tournament for CSGO production-wise that I've seen in a long, long time. I really felt no hiccups. So we want to talk about that a little bit. But first, let's start the show off with a brand new segment that I would like to call The More You Know.
The more you know about an impending disaster, the more likely you are to do something about it. That's why we're embarking on a campaign of public service messages, news stories, and community activities designed to make you familiar with the deepening crisis. And our campaign is called, appropriately, The More You Know.
Thank you, sir. So, Brandon, you may have noticed the growing popularity in the domain .gg.
There's this one that is really coming to mind. I've seen it quite a few times that ends with that.
Could it be our website?
Oh.
TCR.gg?
Oh, yeah.
There's also Mastery.gg. There's Halo.gg. Any esports related .gg that you could think of. It's a very popular thing now. GG, good game. You know, it's very popular in esports, and basically anything is getting snagged up with it just for the sake of maybe you being able to use it one day. But did you know it actually has nothing to do with esports or video games at all?
Really?
That's
what
right.
What does it have to do with?
It's actually the official government domain for the Bailiwick of Guernsey.
Wait, the what of Guernsey?
The Bailiwick.
Bailiwick.
Look, I don't have the definition of that
in
my notes.
I'm looking that up.
But
so explain the Bailiwick of Guernsey.
Yeah, so it's made up of a small group of islands right outside the UK, and you would think, oh, is that part of the UK? Actually, no, it's not. Although, its defense is the responsibility of the United Kingdom, the Bailiwick is not part of the United Kingdom, but rather a possession of the British Crown. It lies within the common travel area of the British Isles and is not a member of the European Union, but has a special relationship with it, being treated as part of the European community for the purpose of free trade in goods. Did you know that, Brandon?
I didn't. Now I do.
Did you also know that together the Bailiwick of Guernsey and Bailiwick of Jersey form the geographical grouping known as the Channel Islands?
I didn't know there were Channel Islands.
This is very true. It's right outside the UK. It's a hot tourist attraction. Do you know why?
They're islands. They have beaches.
I don't think really anywhere in the UK has beaches. I think it's pretty rocky. But no, that is not why. It's actually because Guernsey has always been a hotspot for military activity. In fact, due to the natural island geography, in the Middle Ages, it was a haven for pirates that would ambush ships as they passed through the channel. And also, in World War II, the Bailiwick was occupied by German troops. Guernsey was heavily fortified during World War II out of all proportions to the island's strategic value. German's defenses and alterations are still visible today. So if you're ever doing your European World War II, which I think is what my honeymoon is going to be, we can go to Guernsey, which holds the domain for .gg, and see this. Interesting stuff there.
It's actually right in between France and United Kingdom.
Yes, it is right there. It's a tiny little island that no one knows about, and yet we all use its domain. So this little country right outside of France is probably like, what the hell is going on?
Why is everybody buying our domain names?
That's probably going to be their biggest export here in the next year because everyone's using their domain. The population's not that big. It's just around 65,000, according to the 2014 census, rather. The national animals for the island of Guernsey are the donkey and the Guernsey cow.
A donkey?
Hey, they never said they were cool. The warmest months, if you're ever thinking of visiting or living in Guernsey, July and August, when temperatures are generally around 68 degrees Fahrenheit, with some days occasionally getting so hot as of 75. That's like in the winter summer? Yes. That is like the hottest time it gets is 75. That is beautiful. On average, the coldest month is February, and with an average weekly mean air temperature of 42 Fahrenheit. So really, never gets that hot, never gets that cold. They got a pretty badass domain name. Their country animal is a donkey. What can go wrong? Sounds like the best place ever. So the next time you go to a .gg domain, such as tcr.gg, to check out all the latest episodes of the show, remember to thank your pals at the Bailiwick of Guernsey. And now, Brandon, you can tell yourself, the more you know.
That was intense. I feel like I just learned a lot.
Well, when you clicked on the eSports podcast, did you really think you would learn something about the Bailiwick of Guernsey? No, you didn't, but you did. And now you know that the .gg domain has nothing to do with anything. It's actually a government domain that we can just buy out.
I seriously want to like email somebody in their like trade or commerce portion of their government and ask them, like, do you pay attention to how many people are buying your domain names?
There is no way, because if they did, it would not be like the $75 a year it costs us for that. I mean, they would spike that bad boy.
Well, I mean, that is kind of expensive for a domain name, but it's still a good deal when you consider the value of it.
.gg. I mean, that's so. It fits so well with anything gaming related. So, yes, I agree. But on to a little bit something more relevant towards esports. We had San Jose IEM happening last weekend. And like I said before in the show intro, that the production value to me, I'm a production nerd, you know that. But man, this production value was top notch. I loved the crew. I love that Machine was there as the desk host. I love Machine.
Is one of my favorite people casting right now.
He is so underrated. And I get Richard Lewis and Thorne weren't there, but I'm not going to lie. It was kind of nice. I don't hate them by any means, but I mean, after like four straight tournaments of Richard Lewis and Thorne, man, I'll take Machine's beautiful face any day of the week.
He is definitely one of the, like him and Anders. I mean, we've talked about not wanting the same casters at every single tournament, but if like Machine and Anders were at every single tournament, I don't think I'd be upset.
Well, and I think you'll always see Semler, and you'll always see Anders. It was nice that Pansy got in the mix. I know a lot of people, she takes a lot of hate from a lot of people, but I think Pansy's great too.
She does very well. She doesn't have like, there's a certain casters that have the weird accents that kind of make it difficult to understand or weird inflections on when they're talking. She does a really good job of keeping everything nice and never mind.
Yeah, and then you have Henry G, despite his herps. I mean, he brought it too. I think he's great at play-by-play and especially some analysis. You had Maniac there, though. He was the main like player analysis, which, yeah, you know.
After getting dropped from,
G2.
Was it G2?
Yeah, he got dropped from G2, he went to the booth, and not a bad job. Not a bad job. Though I will say, in like the little all-star caster match, I was expecting him just to dominate.
Yeah, he should have gone ham.
Like, I don't know if he was going easy on them or what, but I was like, Maniac, you're supposed to be the professional here. Like, this is not boding well if you're trying to get on another team and you're struggling against American casters.
Moses.
Yeah, Moses and everything. And then, of course, you have the cream of the crop, the creme de la creme, whatever that phrase is. OJ. OJ was the stage presence. He was the main host of the entire thing. And I love OJ too. I think he looks like a villain out of, like, if Sex and the City had villains, OJ would be a villain in Sex and the City.
Do you know his background?
I don't. I have no idea.
He's a BBC media personality. Like, his deal, his whole shtick is exactly what you see up there on like the ESL stage. Like, that's him, 110%.
I just feel like he could talk the panties off a nun because just he has such charm on stage and everything there. That being said, I also feel, and I actually told you this before the show, that he's the guy that I feel like he would sleep with my mom, but then insist on me calling him dad, even though me and him were like buddies all throughout college.
I'm not even sure how to respond to that.
Like, I don't know what it is about him, but it just seems like he'd be like, hey, sport. And I'd be like, OJ, bro. Like, we went to, like, we had history together.
We were on a beer pong team together.
Right.
What are you
like,
doing?
You're not my dad, OJ. But that being said, I mean, bringing up dad and mom, I actually have this exclusive audio here that my mom sent me. And she was like, hey, Tim, do you know this OJ guy? Like, he totally just left me a voicemail and everything. I was like, well, okay. I mean, I guess I'll listen to it. And so here's that.
I've been really trying. Keep me hanging there. Dramatic pause on walking out. How do you feel it's going to go? You've got five guys going balls out. Believe me, they're good-looking guys. How do you feel you can perform there? And just to put it out there, you come over here, you enjoy the wonderful hospitality, and then you beat their head. Oh, yes, you assume right. It was big. It's big now. Are you ready? And just to put it out there, you came, you saw, you conquered, you did what you said you were going to do. How happy are you? Thank you to you for being so amazing. Listen, I know I'm kissing your ass, but it's true. You really were fantastic. So then, for the final time, let's hand back to the analyst desk, and we'll do it one more time. Yes! Thank you very much.
I don't know what that was about. Like, why would he call and leave my mom that voicemail? Maybe I should ask her. It was a weird ending. Know, I don't know why he ended the phone call if he was calling my mom that he would go back to the desk.
All I know is, like, if you take that voicemail and the things he said on stage during the EU NA caster match, apparently he likes moms.
And we will get to the bottom of this. But speaking of production, I mean, can you think of anything else? There was real no snafus.
No, and
I mean, apart from like your generic technical issues, which I mean, that's just part of it nowadays. I mean, every tournament's going to have one.
MLG should take note of how they had the crowd microphone set up.
This is very true. That crowd mic, it didn't sound like it was two people like SIVO, because SIVO was two people. That was actually a pretty good crowd. I loved the setup that they had where it was at. So it was at the Shark Tank. I don't know what the actual official name of it is. It's where the San Jose Sharks play.
I think this is the Shark Tank.
Something Pavilion.
Oh.
It's something. Anyways, it's where the San Jose Sharks play. And they basically had it split like three quarters of it. It looked more so for League. Like they had each end. One was for League of Legends and one was for Counter-Strike. And the way the stages were set up, it looked like, I mean, no sound bled over and everything like that. And it was really good.
The very end of it, after the tournament was over and they did the cake in the face, there's a reason why people do pies and not cake. When you get hit with in the face with a cake, you have like this much frosting and then a big spongy piece of bread basically
just
in your face.
Smacking you in the face.
When they pulled those out and started putting them, like shoving them in people's faces, they're like, that's just so awkward. That's such a little nitpick, though. It was just weird.
I would not judge the whole production team on the fact that they picked cakes over pies. But, I mean, looking at it, everything was good on Counter-Strike. Looking at the League of Legends side, you had a little bit more star power there. I mean, you had the president of Intel over there. You had Mark Cuban there, which I was not expecting. And looks like he might be getting a little bit more involved with esports. I actually have some audio here of Mark Cuban with Christine Leahy, who is actually, we've actually had her a piece of her audio on the show before. Because, what do you mean? Ugh. She gets a pass in my book.
Well, yeah, of course she does in your book.
So, Kristen Leahy is the co-host of The Herd with Colin Cowherd. We've actually played his audio here a long time ago where he's basically bashing esports on his show on Fox. And she's the female co-host, and she was really the only one on the show that was like, oh, well, it's not that bad.
No, now, she wasn't like, oh, well, it's not that bad. For as far right as Colin Cowherd went with his hate for esports, she went the complete opposite direction.
Now, I also think, knowing what we know now, it almost is like, well, I kind of just got like a job doing stuff with him, so I'm gonna back away from this. Either way, though, she was there. She's easy on the eyes, and she actually interviewed Mark Cuban, so here's a little piece of that audio.
You're just gonna have to stay tuned. I mean, look, one thing I will say is, I love Colin, but he's an idiot when it comes to esports, right?
And we're, of course, talking about my co-host on Fox, Colin Cowherd, who calls e-gamers nerds. No, and I have to disagree with them completely. But what do you have to say to guys like Colin who just hate on the e-gamers?
Look, I'm a noob. You know, I'm still getting into it, but I love it, right? It's like playing five-dimensional chess against the world, right? It's like one of the smartest games I've ever played. You've got to have dexterity. You got to be quick. This is a real sport, and people are going to figure it out really, really quick.
Like, oh, my God, they're just nerds.
She said it twice. E-gamers. What is that?
I believe e-gamers would be what normal people would call a gamer. And in fact, I even hate the word gamer, and I'll just say that I'm someone who plays video games. If you're asking, do I own a PC and I have Counter-Strike on it? Yes. Do I own a PS4? Yes, I play video games. I would not say I'm a quote-unquote gamer, because that just sounds like something someone who would say e-gamers.
Well, I mean, I guess if you need to like specify between somebody that plays electronic games and chess, or
maybe
Connect
that's
Four.
What it was.
Like, is she part of like a checkers league maybe, and so she didn't want to get them confused?
She takes it personal. She wants to make people know she's talking about the electronic gamers.
And I do laugh at, even, I mean, Mark Cuban owns the Mavs, but he still couldn't help but compare esports to regular sports. I'm wondering when that's going to fall off, because it's clearly different. There's obviously
difference. I don't
think
it will
there.
Ever fall off. I mean, I'm guilty of it too, though. Because, I mean, what do you compare it to? I mean, that's going to, and when we say regular sports, because I know Mark Cuban said, oh, it's a sport. Yes, we can consider it a sport as far as sake of being competitive. But when you think sports, you have football and everything. You have motor sports, which is racing, and then you have esports, which is video game. There's not anything wrong with putting
the sport moniker on it.
Right. Just saying, yes, it's a sport, but it's an esport. So I don't think there's anything wrong with relating it to there, because isn't that the bar that eventually will be measured to? when esports is on TV, isn't that the bar that it's going to be measured to?
Yeah, TBS is going to be putting it up right against him in the NBA. I mean, playing it on Friday nights on prime time. So.
And that's, I mean, I'm not saying that they're expecting those numbers like they do have on, you know, Monday Night Football or, you know, Wednesday Night Hockey on NBC or anything like that. But I think they are expecting it to eventually grow into a spectator sport.
I don't know. It's just my whole thing with it is this is especially true with the way it's set up right now. And that when you, so just watching the tournaments that we've been watching over the last 2 months, when you sit down to watch a tournament, that's not like, oh, a couple hours watching a football or hockey game. It's all weekend long, like 12 hours a day. Nothing but watching Counter-Strike.
My fiance left to do running around at like 11 a.m. and I was settling in to start watching San Jose. She came home at 9 o'clock and I was still watching San Jose. And she was like, is that literally the same thing? And I was like, yup.
And it might be, you might be
and
three
that is
or four
on,
matches
and that
in.
That was on
but...
day two. I watched a whole day before.
That's what, yeah. So I just hate that we're trying to measure up against something that's just completely different from what esports is right now, which is a lot of time.
It is a big time commitment, and it is right now. Unless it's a big match, it's the perfect background noise. And then when I hear Anders just start slurring his words together, that's when I know I need to watch.
You've got to be kidding me.
Yes.
And that's when I'm like, oh, okay.
Yes, whenever he says, you got to be kidding me, that's when I know to watch. And then I'll start, you know, folding clothes. And then he'll say it again, I'll go watch. But then, you know, you go and do things in the other room. That's where it sits now, and then obviously you have your teams that you want to watch. As far as that, though, I mean, I guess that's a perfect segue into our interview with Jason Baker. We sat down with him actually right before the show to discuss with him. Again, he has been in the esports industry for a very long time. I mean, since early 2000s, he was part of.
He had his own video. He had his own video production company that did CPL tournaments, broadcasting him interviews. Partnered with Gottfrag. Worked a lot with Sir Scoots, who still does a bunch of casting and stuff like that now.
He knows Richard Lewis. He knows Thorne. He's worked with all of them. He was director of broadcast for a New York Minute for MLG. You know, rumor is he might be
doing something bigger. So
bigger things for there. And so definitely his opinion holds some weight here. And we actually were very lucky enough to talk with him. And joining us on the phone right now, our very special guest, Mr. Jason Baker. You may know him as Alchemist. You've probably seen some of his work without even knowing it. He worked with MLG once upon a time and has even dabbled in ESL. If you ever watched The Road to BlizzCon, the recent one, you probably saw some of his production directing work. Stop me if I'm wrong at any of that. Jason, how are you doing today, sir?
So far, so good, and I am doing great.
Excellent, excellent. So, obviously, kind of let the listeners, at least a little background, know, because you are kind of through the production hoops of esports, correct?
Yeah, I'm kind of one of those weird hybrids. I was league side of esports and production side of esports at the same time. It's kind of, but I never wanted to be famous, so I never really like bragged about things.
Well, I think I took a look at or you shared some videos with me from your YouTube, and I think there was only one that you actually showed that had you actually interviewing anybody. Everything else was your behind the scenes kind of work.
Yeah, I always said the questions to the interviewers, and then they said it to the person, and we edited me out.
Okay, so all of those fantastic interviews through CPL and MLG back in the day, that was Jason Baker's work. Right there. Gotcha. So when did you guys actually start Gottfrag?
I did not start Gottfrag. Actually, I started a company called MFA Video Productions, and then I joined Gottfrag, but as a partner. Gottfrag started in 2002, I believe.
Now, help me out here then, because I know if you Google Gottfrag, there's still some things out there on the interwebs. I see that there's a Facebook and everything that posted, I think, recently as November. Maybe not November, but either way, is there still some Gottfrag out there? I know there's, you kind of see blimps of it.
What happened is MLG had shut Gottfrag down. MLG did a big shift on some of their corporate leadership, and they decided to cut down some stuff. They asked Sir Scoots and myself to move to New York, and we said no, and they ended up just closing it all down. So what you see is just people's articles and pictures that they've saved, but the actual server and database and everything is gone as far as we know.
I actually took a look on the Wayback Machine, which is a website that you can go look at how websites look way back. And it's actually pretty funny to look at Gottfrag compared to like HLTV.org now. It's very close.
Yeah, HLTV kind of started getting big around 2006, 2007, and they were kind of a European answer to us. SK Gaming was another big news site as well, but they pretty much always copied the news off of Gottfrag.
So where then were you with CPL? Because I see that, if for those who don't know, if you follow Jason on Twitter, what's your Twitter handle? Alchemist5?
Alchemister5, I think, is as close as I could get.
There you go. So if you follow him on Twitter, A, he is always watching any esports from what I've noticed this weekend. And he also uploads a lot of retro videos for CPL and anything like that. So if you're a fan of watching that kind of stuff, you upload that on YouTube all the time, right?
Yes. My YouTube account is Alk5, I believe is what it is. Yeah. Anytime I run across, there is probably about 300 videos that are gone that I do not have anymore. But every once in a while, somebody will send me some. And if I actually look on YouTube, I can find some of my videos on there. I think there's one with 8 million views. I'm like, oh man, I wish I had that.
And those were all done by your production company, the MFAVP, right?
Yes. I had joined a Counter-Strike team. It was called MFA. And we went to CPL and we started filming stuff. We would play and we'd just get destroyed because, yeah, it was Counter-Strike 1.3, 1.5. Those are some really, really good players. So we'd get destroyed. And we all had full-time jobs. It's just something we did for fun, is we would go down to the CPL and we'd film. And one of the founders of MFA actually started working for Cal and the CPL. So he was working for that on that side, and then we were doing the video stuff. And then in the off season, I was actually doing Cal admin stuff. I was the head of anti-cheat for Cal.
So now looking back at those videos, and obviously we all had our hopes and dreams when esports was young and everything there. But looking back at those, that really stands out to me is nowadays all the pros and everything, they have their mouse bungees, they have their fancy mechanical keyboards and fancy Razer mice and everything. Like, they're very gear specific. And back then it almost looked like everyone could use out of the box Dell mice and keyboards.
Oh no, those are Dell mice. Come on. those are the Microsoft IntelliMouse, which is probably the most popular Counter-Strike mouse that is. I think that's the IntelliMouse. It's the white one.
And if you look at the keyboards, the keyboards now are even modeled after those keyboards they were using then, the mechanical keyboards.
Yeah, almost everybody your cheap $20 keyboard would use cherry switches.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, everybody, you know, SteelSeries started coming in around 2002 with mouse pads first. And they didn't even get into mice and other hardware until 2007 or so. Yeah, I think 2007, I had one of their first mice that caught on fire.
Whoa, wait, your mouse caught on fire?
Well, it was a prototype mouse, but...
So now, did you ever think then, watching those videos and looking at where things are now, that esports would be kind of at the level of production that it is?
Yes. From the first time I sat at a CPL and watched the finals in 2001, watched NIP versus X3, I knew it was going to be big. I knew it was going to be as... That's one of the reasons why we started filming. We're like, if other people could see this game the way we're seeing it, they will be hooked.
So Jason and I actually had a conversation about this when I first kind of approached him about doing the interview, and we talked a lot about, he showed me a lot of videos from back in the CPL days that his company was doing, and the production stuff that they were doing on the CPL videos is, if not at the same level, better than what you see people doing now. And the worst part is, and Jason elaborated on this for me, is that they had to do a lot of this stuff by themselves, like no assistance from Valve or the game or anything like that.
Well, the daily videos that we did with MFAVP, I think at the end, we were doing like 14, 15 videos at an event. So we do 3 or 4 videos a day. And that's 16 hour days. It's 3 of us. And, you know, when you say company, it's actually just 3 guys, 2 engineering students. And I, at the time I was a copier repair tech on vacation, and it was our full-time job. So we would break down how we would do our segments and how we wanted to do our matches. And I would film the live video straight from HLTV into a video camera. And then we'd take that footage and put it right into our videos. So we only had 1 shot to get, you know, the kills. So that's how I kind of started getting good at that. And then 2006, we did with Got Frag, me and Sir Scoots, who I interviewed him in 2002. And then I got him to do some interviews for me in 2003 for MFAVP. And then we started working together at Got Frag. But when we started doing Got Frag TV, we were doing instant replay, which nobody was doing. We were doing real-time stats, which was through the GameSense system on Got Frag, which nobody really does stats. HLTV finally starting to catch up on stats. If you can find them, that site's a mess.
I can't navigate HLTV for my life.
The world of esports stats is a mess. You have to go to like 5 different sites just to finally get a comprehensive of what happened in a match.
It's really a shame. And there's some people that do some really good stats. They just don't really have a job. We'll see how that goes in the next couple of years. There's just a lot of focus at it. But there's people who don't really understand Counter-Strike. I mean, we were the first people to do the assist stat. We were the first to do ADR and stuff like that. And so we would just bring that into the footage. We would, you know, do tickers for the next matches coming up, which, and scores of previous matches. You don't see anybody doing that even now.
Oh no, I think I complained in chat the other day, and I know I've told you, Tim. Like there's companies out there that don't even put the round scores up when a match is going on. You could jump in the middle of a best of 3 and have absolutely no idea where you're at.
Yeah, and that's frustrating. It's terrible for new viewers to come in and see that. The hardest stuff for doing it that way is now if you want to go to player 4, you just hit the number 4 on the keyboard. On 1.6, if you wanted to go to player 4, you would just have to tap your mouse until you got to the guy. So we would have to have more cameras, more in-game cameras than they do now. A lot of times they just use 1.
Yeah.
Now I'm curious then, for your opinion, for someone who's been in the industry, who's really seen it, I mean, grow from the ground up as far as a Counter-Strike really perspective goes there, where is your opinion then on all of the little, you know, I really don't know what to call them, but like mom and pop tournaments there that are out there. Do you like seeing everyone kind of have their own tournament, like how iPower can set up one week and then you have another one this week? Or would you rather see it to where there is one uniform league with a, you know, even if that involves a player union and everything like that?
Player union to protect the players seems like a good idea. I just don't like a barrier of entry. I don't like the fact, you know, if an iBuyPower wanted to do a LAN and they said, oh, well, you can't have this team come because they're non-union and it's just a pug team. I love discovering new talent. I mean, we saw Conquest do some really good stuff at the Acevo LAN. You know, at the CPLs, you would see people come in and just wrecked teams. I mean, Zex beat EOL, who was the number one team predicted to win the CPL in 2002. Summer or winter CPL? I don't remember. I'm not Thorin. I can't remember every single thing. But, you know, I think I'm 90% sure that's winter CPL 2002 that C3D end up winning. But EOL was predicted to win, and Zex came in, and they were just a Cal invite team, but they weren't really known. They were, some people thought Sunmen was online, and they came in and just wrecked them.
So that's a good point. Like, I've kind of got, when we talk about, especially like with MTG buying DreamHack and ESL, or the controlling stake in ESL, and now ESL has purchased EA. Like, you've got this one body, and I'm kind of stuck in purgatory with it, because on one hand, I want there to be like a set season for Counter-Strike, because I mean, we've just had the SIVO LAN, the RGN LAN that just went on. Now we've had IEM, and we've got DreamHack Winter over the last month. All of those tournaments going on, and it's, you know, it's hard to follow if you had a season with an off season similar to like the LCS does. But on the other hand, I'm with you. You get this one body that does all that, and then all of a sudden it becomes much more difficult to get into that market. Like, there's a lot more barrier of entry there.
Yeah, that's what I just like to see. I'd like to see those unknown teams come in and just do something, prove what they can. And they, to have that opportunity, when you play Counter-Strike online, you think the other guy is full of shit.
They're always hacking. So, yeah,
it's so easy to feel like that. But when you go to a LAN, the first LAN that I played with was a DOP, which was the number two team in Counter-Strike in the United States, like in 2001. They had a pug there, and they just wrecked us. Like, I mean, they, like, the second you were around the corner, they just mowed you down. That made me want to get better. And that made me work to get better. And I got, Cal Main, but I got better. But then when I went to the CPL and started playing just in the pub servers on the CPL, those guys from Europe would come in and just with a pistol, and just, and it's not like pistols nowadays, but they would still not just wipe you out. But right now there are players. So like, I look at nothing as a new Counter-Strike player. Now think about that for a minute.
That's your boy right there, Tim.
Someone's been around since for so long. Yeah. I mean, people look at nothing and think that is American Counter-Strike.
And he's a new guy. he would be third generation Counter-Strike is what we would consider him.
Now, do you think that's an issue then for when it comes to North American Counter-Strike, that a lot of or more of the players do seem like newer Counter-Strike? They're part of the new wave, third generations, if you will?
I don't see anything wrong with that. I think more of going to, if you have such a structured league and a lockdown system, you're going to miss players like that. You're going to miss nothing coming up. You're going to miss the next Volcano. You're going to miss, you know, I'm just trying to, you know, even Swag, you know, he's a young kid. You're going to miss players like that coming up if you lock out the league. You know, sometimes we've been going, you know, it's been going on since 2001, but it has ramped up in the last 2 years to this really big level of stadiums. And I don't want to get too fast where amateurs can't get in. So maybe in another 10 years, I wouldn't mind seeing more set things.
Oh, so another 10 years before you get kind of a season set up in one.
That's what I want. I right now, I mean, the players can make decent money. They can travel where they want. They're not locked down to a schedule. They try to hit the majors. They take some events off. They go to the events they think they can win. Next year is going to be crazy. Next year, there are going to be tournaments that for $50,000, and teams are going to be, not going to go.
And I think there's also something we said just in general with esports, where if you are looking at more of like an open group play pool there, I mean, there are some tournaments out there. I know MLG used to do it all the time where you could have that Cinderella story who just decided, you know what, they're coming to Dallas, let's go play in Dallas. And then all of a sudden they're playing against the top teams because they've kept making it through the brackets. And I think that's something that you don't get anywhere else as far as if you're looking at a professional competitive event that where a, you know, quote unquote amateurs can rise up within one tournament, one weekend.
And I think that's what that's what Jason's talking about. Yeah, you're not going to be able to have that if you've got such a structure like the LCS. Unless you work your way through the challenger brackets, unless somebody buys you a spot, you're never touching the LCS. You can't win your way into it in one weekend.
You know, and the other thing with Counter-Strike is you don't have, you know, you used to have, when the internet was terrible, you would have all these concentration of players because you would have LAN centers in colleges. And that's where you'd get a lot of your players. And there would be a weekend tournament that people would drive 6 hours to go to some little LAN for that's giving away $100 or giving away a video card, one video card for a team of five people even. And you would drive 6 hours and you'd play in this tournament and to play on a LAN setting. Now the internet's good enough that you don't get that. Most of the players are online, so you need more incentive to get those players to a LAN.
Do you think the LANs that we've got now, I mean, there's not even a LAN center that I know of here in Dallas anymore. They've kind of gone,
you know,
by the wayside.
Dallas was the mecca of Counter-Strike. I mean, I can think of four big teams that were out in Dallas area.
Yeah, now we don't have anything down here. And yeah, with the internet the way it is, the only reason we used to travel to play Halo all the time was because the original Halo didn't even have online capabilities on it. So
yeah, and it's one of the things that made that game. Well, that and being able to split screen, and so you could 1v1 your friend, and
which we had a big discussion on that, the split screen being missing from the next one, but that's a whole other conversation.
So, Jason, I don't want to waste too much of your time tonight because we definitely appreciate you coming on the show and kind of giving the history of, I mean, really, a brief history of Counter-Strike, competitive Counter-Strike that maybe some people, you know, people think that it started with Source or Go, and really, it's crazy to look at, you know, 1.3 and stuff, and then you see Taz, and you're like, oh, my God, he's been around for ages.
Yeah, it's... You know, I always joke people think esports, it's their thing, and they started it in 2012 or 2009, and it's like, I felt new to esports in 2000, because I missed out on all the Quake tournaments, and I missed out on the Doom tournaments, so I was a noob to esports.
So I'm curious then to get from, because I'm a production nerd, I'm in radio production, if that's what you want to call it. And maybe, you know, you can call me an old man here. Maybe I'm just being a stick in the mud here. But when we're watching these, you know, tournaments, and I know they're all talking about being on TV now, and that's kind of the direction esports is trying to go into the regular TV broadcast world. When you're, you know, even if you're a director or something like that, and your casters, you know, swear or anything like that, because I know in general, esports don't care. But as far as a... There you go.
There's a simple answer right there.
I mean, you know, don't be racist. Don't, you know, there's limits, but, you know, an F-bomb here and there, I don't care. If it's every other word, well, now you just sound uneducated. So, you know, get that guy out of there. But every once in a while, you know, talk some smack to another player, you know, your co-caster. I mean, we're gamers. That's how we talk to each other. I mean, if you guys would see how those, like Thorne and Richard and Moses and all those guys sitting around, how they talk to each other off air.
The on air stuff probably wouldn't be so bad.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people would cry if they were saying that to them. I mean, it's just ruthless. And it's just all in fun. I mean, that's just what you do. I mean, you're supposed to say, you know, get wrecked, fool. You know, I'm being as nice as I can because I don't know your censorship level. So, I mean, that's part of gaming. That's part of your, you know, getting your bravado of, you know, I'm in charge of this. And either if you're playing or at the desk, I mean, that's just going to be how you're going to be.
So speaking of casters and all of that, I do want to ask you, what's the one biggest thing you see missing from production in even just Counter-Strike today?
My philosophy, and on the old Got Frag videos, you can kind of see it, but it was harder to pull off. My Counter-Strike's a story, and it's an evolving, every match is this evolving story. And it is, we could talk for 30 minutes on just this subject of how you tell the story of what are each player's buying. How are the CTs setting up their defenses? Are they aggressive? Are they passive? Have they changed up where they've moved any players? How are the T's moving into position? How are the T's setting up? How's the T's going to take this site? How's the retake going to happen? This player is been off a couple games. Can he get this shot to win the match? Because, you know, it's not just the shot, you know, it's not the frags. It's can this guy get this shot because he's been in a slump? That is more interesting to me than Hiko coming around the corner and getting three frags. If the first frag that he gets is a guy that's in a slump, I want to see that first. To me, that's more interesting. Now, I mean, something like Edwards, where he killed three people through the smoke, I want to see that. And on a 3v1, you always want to be on the one.
Yeah, Tim's commented on that a few times, of them choosing the wrong player, and something as simple as a 3v1-on-3.
Well, it's like a clutch 5v1, and they'll show the team with five guys, and you'll miss the ace from the one man's perspective, and yep, it just kind of throws everything off.
And it goes back to the story. The story is the one guy. Every Counter-Strike player knows what it's like to be that one guy in a 1v5. So to be it in his shoes is what you want to see. Who cares what the frag is? There is no frag that is going to be amazing in a 1v5 from the five standpoint. It's just going to be a typical shot. I don't care if he does a jumping, spinning off shot.
I want to see the one.
Awesome. Well, hey, Jason, again, thank you so much for joining the show. I just got one more question. You can make it as fast as you want it, really. Where do you see, I mean, yourself, first off, can we expect anything from you? And then where do you see esports in the more recent future? I know we mentioned 10 years, maybe that's when you'll want to start seeing actual leagues and formations go. But as for esports now and Counter-Strike more particular, since that's kind of the focus, where do you see that in the near future?
Well, I think you're going to see, I mean, I want it 10 years, but it's going to be faster than that. And it's going to be faster than people are ready for. You're going to have people basically trying to buy. It's kind of what happened when CGS came into the scene. They started buying talent. They started buying teams. You're going to have this war where they're going to try to grab market share. And then they're going to try to give you this watered down product, and it's going to suck. And gamers are going to reject it. So you have to find that right medium. I'll be interested to see what Turner does. I applied for their job. I did not get it, apparently. I'll be interested to see who they have there that actually knows esports. But it's going to be watered down. I mean, TV sucks. TV wants to be us. They want to be Twitch and any streaming service. They wish they were as cool. They wish they had this type of interaction with their fans. So to me, it's a step back to go to TV, but the money's there. So you're going to have next year is going to be a lot of big events, and some of the smaller companies are going to throw out as much money as they can, trying to grab a part of the market share, and it's going to make them fold. And that's just, it's going to be feast and famine. And the people that can hang on, you know, if Turner's starting to see a return for their investment, I mean, if they're smart, they'll look at it as a 10-year investment. But companies aren't like that. They look at a 1 year turnaround.
How many years was CGS was looking at? Was it three?
They didn't even last 2 years.
I know they didn't last 2 years. I thought the original agreement was something a little longer term than that, but I don't remember what Richard Lewis said.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was either, but I mean, they just, every single thing that they did wrong.
And bottom line is TV, there's no other industry that's quicker to pull the plug than television.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
They have no patience for something that doesn't make them money season one, so...
Well, Jason, I appreciate you taking the time, especially after I was a few minutes late to get you on the phone. Can you tell us again one more time your Twitter handle and your YouTube account? Because I want everybody to go watch these old school CPL videos and really appreciate what MFAVP was doing back in the early 2000s.
All right. It's Alchemister on Twitter. Alchemister, the number 5. And my, let's see, my YouTube is ALK5, A-L-C, then spelled out 5. And I got, I don't know, I guess about 100 or so videos up there. If you guys like good old classic 800 by 600 Counter-Strike, that's up there. I also worked for TSN for a while, which was radio only. And I found some of those, so I might put a couple of those up as well.
Good stuff. Well, hey, Jason, if you're ever near Dallas, give us a call, and when we can meet up and talk some more CSGO.
All right, thanks.
Awesome. Thank you, sir. Again, thank you so much to Alchemist there for taking the time out of his day to kind of walk down memory lane of CPL and everything. It was awesome hearing that kind of stuff there, especially for, you know, he mentioned nothing was third-generation Counter-Strike. Well, kind of feel that we're in that same boat. I mean, we're in our mid-20s, so yeah, I remember playing 1.6. Actually, my first, and I'm sure I will get some hate for this, my first ever time playing Counter-Strike, real. I mean, I remember playing on my uncle's computer and not having a clue what I was doing, but when it was actually released on Xbox, which I think played on 1.6 engine.
That was 1.5.
Okay, see, so 1.5, see, so I'm old school.
I remember we used to play Aztec all the time on that.
And we thought Aztec was, like, the best map. Like, it won't get any better than this, guys. And now look at it. Aztec is a joke, and we don't know what the hell we were talking about there. So it was awesome hearing from him. Again, check his Twitter out. Check his YouTube out. It has awesome stuff there. And, again, I mean, watch it and then compare to see where it's at now. I mean, you'll be blown away that what they were doing in early 2000s, there are companies today not doing it. But speaking of, you know, companies that we already mentioned, IEM had an awesome production value. They also had some awesome competition going on here, at least for some teams. Again, let's go jump into this right away then, since we're already so long on time here. Start from worst to first, VP, Virtus Pro.
Throw it out. Doesn't count, my opinion.
I don't think it counts because obviously they weren't playing with their full roster. Snacks was out with, last I heard, a right eye issue. His eye, I guess, had some problems, so he had to stay back and he couldn't travel with the team, but he should be fine for DreamHack Winter. So they had Michu sub in for him. And
And I'm a Liquid fan. I've got the shirt. I was rooting for them during the game, and Liquid kind of rolled over him. But you just can't count it when you're missing a player like that.
No, especially when you're on that level. Like, I feel like the higher level you are, the harder it is to not play with your five guys. Counter-Strike is such a team-oriented thing to where, like, even like us, how we always play with our same group of friends in a not even real competitive manner. But like, I know what they're all going to do just based off of from when we've played with them. So... With having Snacks out and Michu there, it just looked like all of them wanted to go home.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's 20% of the team when you change a guy out, so it's kind of difficult to make that exchange. And I mean, Liquid played well against VP, even with VP's full roster. At Cluj, they took VP to overtime in their first match. So clearly they had their number. This tournament, I mean, VP got rolled out real quick. I almost feel kind of bad for them traveling all the way over here for that.
I would, except for they clean up some poor ranked tournaments. I mean, they just won SIVO, so maybe they never even left, considering everything was so close.
I do wonder, though, so if the teams get the money they win, if VP would have won with a stand-in, does he get a cut of that money? Like, is he on contract?
I'm sure that's probably behind closed door ways. I
just,
mean,
just a food for thought.
Yeah, so, and then you had LG. You had Luminosity, who didn't really play up to par from what they were leading up to the tournament.
Here's the deal with Luminosity, and I'm going to go ahead and say this before I get into it. HLTV just broke a story that they're looking to change out two players, which is exactly what I was going to say.
Prove it.
Luminosity's got Cold Zera that has absolutely been killing it. Super consistent. And then you've got Steel and Bolts that have been consistent, but in the bad way. Awful. Very bad. And then Fallen's kind of average in the middle. He does pretty well most of the time. HLTV said that they're looking to change them out for FNX and Taco, who play for Games Academy. Games Academy was the other Brazilian team invited to the RNG tournament that got bounced really early. The only problem is if you look at FNX and Taco and compare them to Steel and Bolts, they're about the same player. And what benefit do you get in changing out players if you're not getting somebody better?
I think LG is a team in that position, though, where it's hard to swap out players and arguably get someone better. You're on the cusp of, with the core five that you have, you know, you're competing with higher tier teams. So, I mean, who are you going to replace that is going to legit make you better?
In a talent pool in Brazil right now, I mean, they've got solid players, but nobody that's going to put them over the edge. And I don't think you're going to get that in Brazil unless, you know, you've got to go outside of the country to get something like that.
Speaking of outside the country, Cloud9, they didn't do it again. I mean, in their defense, they did start the tournament against TSM. They were a clear favorite going in. I don't know what to say really about Cloud9 anymore. It's basically what I expected, so I'm not really disappointed. You know, I don't think anyone expected Cloud9 to make it out of there. I do think it's probably time to stop treating them like they are the top North American team. Like, it almost makes me really upset when I'm watching these tournaments and you have OJ interviewing Nothing, and Nothing is sitting there rapping in front of everybody before the match, and just really, I get it. Everyone's there to have a good time, but I mean, when everyone's sitting there saying like, so what's it like being like, the country is out looking at you and blah, blah, blah. And then here's Liquid kind of getting like, you know, the stepchild treatment of just like, oh, and hey, Liquid, now that Cloud9's out, now you're America's favorite, which, you know, maybe fan base for Cloud9. But as far as skill wise and everything, I mean, Liquid is the favorite going into tournaments. Cloud9 is not America's sweetheart anymore as far as being favorites going in. That time has passed.
And we've talked about that before, about having that competitive drive to want to win, but it kind of seems like they're just more interested in being personalities.
Yeah, I think they're enjoying the moment of being professional gamers and being America's sweetheart, but eventually that's going to have to change. Eventually you have to break up the band to try to find different ways around where you're hitting, because you constantly... I get that they won, what was the one with the...
RNG.
RNG, I get that they won RNG, and they beat Liquid there, but it wasn't a big enough pool. Like, if the only way you're going to get through tournaments is because...
You beat up on the other North American teams.
Right, then I guess great. But when Liquid can perform against European teams and you can only perform against North American teams, I don't know how, as a structure, how that's going to hold up in the end.
I've told you my opinions on Cloud9. I really think they could, if they would just drop one player, and even just the organization to send a message to the other players that, hey, you guys need to win. This isn't, you know, summer camp. I think they still have the skill to do it. They just don't have the drive. I'm with you on it.
Right, yeah, that's exactly what I think too. And then, of course, in fifth place, you had CLG, which was essentially playing with house money, considering, what, a week and a half ago, they weren't even supposed to be there. But because Envious opted out of the tournament due for obvious reasons of what happened in Paris, they did not want to travel. So CLG took their place and, you know, they were knocked out by G2 Fierce Round. But I mean,
CLG did what CLG does.
Yeah, I mean, what did you expect? Especially when they weren't planning on being in the tournament. I think that can take some effect there. Bumping up, though, into the more respectable area, more of the prize pool area, Liquid got fourth place. For me, I felt like being that Liquid, you know, beat Virtus Pro and everything there, by the time they made it to the semifinals, I felt like Liquid was basically playing with house money at that point. I mean, yeah, they really screwed the pooch when they did not take the second map against Na'Vi when they were up 11-4, and then they got to 14 wins on the map on Dust 2, I believe, and then they couldn't get those last two wins. They couldn't close it out, and you just saw it. You saw Hiko, you saw everybody on Liquid, just their face was just... When that round ended, I don't know if you saw it, but Na'Vi, they all got up, they high-five, they hug, and Liquid was still sitting down by the time Na'Vi even made it over there.
It's the same consistency issue that you saw at RNG when, and I really feel like they don't have a leader on that team. They've got Hiko that kind of acts like the mouthpiece when he's doing interviews and stuff, but like at the RNG land when they were talking about being frustrated for losing at SIVO and everything, and then they go out and they play really, really well, but they get that confidence built up, and then they act like, oh, we can beat anybody, and then they just get rolled, and it's like they just crumble. And I don't understand why they can't just keep that original mentality of, like, we need to go out there and win every game, like, playing as the underdog, because they can clearly win when they do that. And I mean, they take VP 16-2 and then 16-9. Then they get completely rolled by Na'Vi in the first map 16-7. And then they have, you know, the game you were talking about where they were two rounds away from taking it to a third map and couldn't close it out. It's the same old story. You're seeing it at every single LAN.
Yeah. And another team that wasn't supposed to be there was G2 Esports. They weren't supposed to be there, but because NiP dropped out, for whatever reasons NiP drops out for nowadays, my speculation is that it's behind closed door scenes with ownership that NiP just didn't want to go. But G2 was there and they made it to the semifinals and lost to TSM, which eventually obviously made it to the finals. So I think, again, similar to CLG, G2 was kind of just there for the ride. I mean, there was real no expectations for G2. So, they had
some crazy swings in their matches. Like, the first map that they beat TSM on, it was 16-5. And then TSM just rolled over them two more maps, 16-7 and 16-6. So, they had some pretty crazy matches going on. It may be a case of not having time to work with the new player with... AZ on the roster to get some of the strats and things down in that aspect, but you got to perform a little better than that, especially when you're given the opportunity on a stage like IEM San Jose was.
Yeah, but to speak of performing better than on the opposite side, you have TSM who did make second place again. Always the bridesmaids, never the bride. That's what TSM is to me. They constantly go into tournament after tournament being a favorite and constantly get second place. And in all their interviews, all their pre-tournament interviews and post-tournament interviews, it's just like, man, I really don't want to get second place again. And then after the tournament, they're like, man, we really need to stop getting second place. Like, they just have to get over the hump of winning one of these tournaments. But sure enough, after you're looking at this lineup, after VP went out, you would say TSM had a clear shot. This was their tournament to take. And then Na'Vi decided to play out of their minds. But here's an interesting stat with this tournament. Did you know that TSM was actually the only team to drop a map for the whole tournament, other than the teams that won? In quarterfinals, G2 beat CLG 2-0. Na'Vi beat Luminosity 2-0. Team Liquid beat VP 2-0. TSM beat Cloud9 2-1. In semifinals, Na'Vi beat Liquid 2-0. TSM beat G2 2-1. They're the only ones that didn't have a clean sweep throughout this entire tournament.
Really? That is a pretty interesting stat.
I don't know if that means anything because they still made the finals, but that stood out to me. I mean, it goes to show that you actually don't need to have clean sweeps. You know, you can afford losing one map and maybe not working on every type of smoke on that map if you can win too.
The thing that bothered me about TSM, especially in the finals, is the map bans that they had at the beginning made absolutely zero sense for TSM. It was completely and utterly reactionary to Navi. I mean, TSM banned Mirage, which was TSM's best map to date, their best map with a 59% win rate. But they banned it because Navi has a 55% win rate on it. Like, how do you ban your best map because you're afraid the other team might be better at it?
I agree. I mean, I've said it before, too, where I think you should veto maps based off of your weaknesses as opposed to the other team's strength. Have confidence in your own skills. I mean, you're TSM, for crying out loud. You don't need to worry about Navi and what they can do on Mirage when you know if you have the confidence that you can play them on it, why worry about it?
And I mean, I feel like that even translated to their strategy in game. Watching that Dust 2 map that they were playing, when Navi would do an A split and push up to Cat and then through long at the same time, which was timed perfectly every time they did it, TSM was like me in matchmaking. Like, they couldn't figure out who to shoot at first. And then they had that same reactionary, you know, strategy the whole map. It just wasn't working. I'm not sure if that's the reason why they keep running, you know, coming up second place.
I don't know, and I'm sure they don't know, and I'm sure they're going to take a hard look at it, because you had Navi, who I'll admit, they shut me up and proved me wrong, because it was on this very show that I said Navi was borderline, to me, top five team. I think they were a solid number five in the world team at times. And then here they showed up. They showed up second place in collusion, first place here, and just Guardian went off with the op.
Guardian and Seized in the finals were plus 18 Guardian and plus 14 Kill to Death in the finals. I mean, that's impressive.
I mean, watching Guardian play some, like, using the op on Cobble, man, it was insane. The camera just never left Guardian when he had the op, because he would just carry the entire team. Not saying that the rest of the team needed to be carried, but it was insane at the level that Navi was playing at, to 2-0 TSM in the finals. And it wasn't even like a close 2-0. I mean, they
not even
dominated them in the grand finals.
None of the TSM players had a positive KD or a rating over 1 from HLTV.org throughout the finals.
And so Navi, again, had redemption after coming into second at Kaluge, which you actually have some audio from that, right?
Yeah, I think it has something to do with your mom again and OJ or something along those lines.
Right, so I guess you had a beef with OJ's. This is after Navi had won. He was speaking with Guardian, I believe.
Yep.
And basically just asked him a stupid question, right?
Play the audio real quick.
Does this make up at all for the loss in Cluj at the Major, at DreamHack?
Sorry?
Does it make up for the loss in the final there, the fact that you've now come here and lifted this trophy?
Why would you ever ask a player if one tournament means more than the other one? He's asked this before. Because
you have to.
But I'm like, there's no good way to answer this question. And then you're asking it in English to somebody that clearly is struggling with it. Like, he doesn't... I mean, you can prepare better than that.
I've told you this before the show, and I've been in locker rooms where reporters are asking athletes questions, and you have to ask them these generic questions where you know the answer to, but you're just hoping he says that. What that was is he's asking the question in hopes of a specific answer. And that's what I think that had to have been. Clearly, what do you want Guardian to go up there and say? Like, well, you know,
Cluj was just, yeah, whatever, I won this one.
I mean, yeah, this is great, but I mean, this is like a little white trophy. Looked cool when it was standing on the light, and then I lifted it up, and I was like, oh.
It's not major money or anything.
It doesn't glow all the time. So, again, I'll give OJ pass with his dreamy accent and his perfectly trimmed facial hair. So overall, I am a success, right? North America.
It was a great event.
Awesome crowd, awesome everything there. The one thing I wish that they would do is soundproof booths. I wish they would do it. I mean, why not? There was already controversy of, I think it was Guardian's headshot on Cobblestone where he shot through the wall, and they claim that if you see it, then like not on GoTV, so you wouldn't be able to see it because we don't actually see it from the player's perspective of what he sees on his computer. But apparently, like, you can see through that specific wall and their name will pop up.
I did see that,
so
yeah.
That's what people are claiming. He saw the name and then he shot through the wall to get the headshot through the wall. Other people are claiming that he heard the crowd and saw the crowd was freaking out, so he just took a shot. Because obviously, if you're having that, the spectator x-ray vision that you can see, the crowd's going to be freaking out that the fact that he is right there ready to headshot someone and he's going to shoot.
If he has the reaction time to notice the crowd freak out and then digest and understand that that means he probably has a shot lined up and then to take the shot before either of those players move, he deserves it.
Again, that's why I just think, why eliminate, just add soundproof booths and then be done with it, right? How hard can it be? So, I mean, that's really, yeah. I mean, do you have any other thoughts for San Jose?
It's a good event. I'm looking forward to having more
What is the next big CS GO event then? Columbus? That can't be it.
In North America?
Yeah.
Unless DreamHack Austin
would be the next one, pending on teams.
But CS has got the major going on in Columbus in April of 2016, so.
But on to the micro. Your favorite segment of small stories that we just don't have the time to really dive deep into. We've actually mentioned it a little bit in the interview, but ESL is acquiring, or have acquired, I guess, probably at this point, ESEA, which I'm not going to lie. I read that headline and I thought that they were always kind of a part of each other anyways.
I think ESL owned part of ESEA.
I think they were just really good partners. I think they just...
ESL used ESEA to qualify teams and...
Right, exactly.
But that also means MTG now owns DreamHack, ESL, and ESEA.
It's slowly happening. ESL said they aren't going to have a hands-on day-to-day operation of ESEA.
And you would be absolutely insane to think that they didn't announce this as MTG buying ESEA, and they, instead they did ESL is buying ESEA to avoid that.
They don't want to make it look. Every time someone buys out another company, they always say they're not going to take over day-to-day operations. In the end, I can tell you, they're going to take over day-to-day operations. I don't think you'll see much of a change other than you'll probably see ESEA slowly phased out. Again, we also mentioned that the MLG is rewarded for the first North American CSGO major. $250,000 prize pool. Pretty weak, if you ask me.
I'm telling you, it's capped. Valve caps that.
I get that they cap it, but why? I mean, I know they want it like crowdfunded and all that. We don't have time on this episode, but I don't like crowdsourced prize pools. I think it's
under the Halo World Championships.
Yeah. What is that? What is your micro contribution?
Well, the Halo World Championship is up to $1.7 million, mostly crowdfunded through purchasing of rec packs.
See, and it's not that I'm against it. So it's not like that. That is awesome that it's up to over $1.5 million and it's all because of crowdsourced things. I just don't like that esports has to be crowdsourced. It's not that I'm against crowdsourcing for prize pool. I just hate the fact that it has to be that way to get big prize money.
I understand.
I mean, Dota does it with the Invitational, and that's how they get their huge prize money.
It eliminates the risk and investment of companies in the tournaments. They, you know, if the tournament sucks and a crappy team wins it, then they're like, oh, well, we're only out $250,000 instead of $2 million or whatever it is. Also, SK Gaming added a Vainglory team. Do you know what Vainglory is?
I do not.
Vainglory is the first MOBA optimized for touch screens.
I think I do know this.
It is a tablet MOBA.
Yes, I do know what this is because when I went to PAX South, they had a big booth there, and Vainglory was everywhere.
So SK Gaming has added a Vainglory team, and apparently over in Korea, they're putting on some crazy events. I'll put some links in the show notes so you can kind of see, but they're putting on some pretty impressive events for a tablet MOBA. I mean, I didn't even realize you could spectate this game until I saw this story, so...
I feel like if you ever wanted to make a quick way into esports, just make a MOBA and you'll at least be relevant for like one or two tournaments. Just if you ever wanted to dip your toes into, I wonder what it would be like to have my game in esports. Just convert it over into a MOBA and someone will pick you up for a few tournaments. You know, Cloud9 might make a team for you and then you'll be good. Just for a little bit at least. But speaking of MOBAs, you have the Frankfurt Major. For Dota 2, that was a big thing going on, and I wish we had time to discuss it more, but we don't. OG defeats Team Secret 3-1 to be crowned the Frankfurt Major Winner Championship, whatever you want to call it. OG, actually, that is a fascinating story. When you want to talk about a Cinderella story, OG entered as one of the European qualifiers. They played through the lower brackets. It wasn't like they just had an easy road. They took out teams like Fnatic. They took out Virtus Pro of Dota 2. And then they even beat Evil Genius, who is top 1-2 in the world for Dota. So, I mean, they did not have an easy road. And then they even took out Secret for the championship, which is, again, 1-2, right? You have Team Secret is 1-2 as far as Evil Genius Team Secret on who wants to be number one in the world on any given day. So OG, this little team, went all the way through the rankings. And I mean, I watched that, man. It was awesome. And really, they won 3-1. But that third map, I think the only reason Team Secret won is because OG switched up their strategy. Because for the first two maps, Team Secret had no answers for them. They walked right through in the second match, man. It was like right down the middle lane. They couldn't touch Team Secret, or vice versa, however you want to word it. OG dominated them, and it was awesome to watch and see how a team like that rise up. It gives me hope that, no, it gives me no hope. There's no hope. Then also, I know you gathered a lot of notes on this, because actually before we started the show, this was actually going to be a main talking point, but there's just so much in Counter-Strike and esports where we typically record the show on Monday nights. If something happens on Tuesday, by the time we record again, it's old news because there's one or two tournaments that have already happened and we just can't bring it up and justify it being relevant. But the LG and Team Liquid feud at RGN,
it got pretty rough. It got to the point where Cold Zero was tweeting out in Portuguese, like making fun of Hiko being like your typical American.
Let's set it up real quick. So for the listeners who don't know, basically what happened was Liquid was playing LG. Everything was going fine until the round was about, I think it was like 12-11, I want to say.
I think it was 11-11,
or it was somewhere around there in the match. I don't have the notes in front of me. But then an HLTV cameraman or a photographer.
A volunteer photographer. That he was like a friend of a cameraman.
What? A volunteer at an esport or something?
Go figure, yeah.
So somehow he accidentally bumped into LG, a player from LG, and I think it was Affairs computer, and turned it off. I don't know how you accidentally bump into a computer to the point where you turn it off, but I guess he did.
He had to have stepped on a power cable or a strip have,
right?
or something.
Every article I read says he accidentally turned off the PC. I don't know what that entails.
Like he accidentally hit the switch on the back of the power right, supply, like stumbled into it.
Yeah. So all this happened. Basically, the rule is if there was a death in the game, if a kill was recorded, they would not replay the round unless both teams were okay with it.
No. Time out. That's the problem. The SIVO rules that RNG used, or RGN used, states that once a match is started, teams are not allowed to restart the match unless a player drops from the server within the first minute of play and no recorded kills or bomb plants are on record. There is nothing about teams being able to restart. And that's where the crap hit the fan, was the admin at the tournament said, if Liquid wants to restart it, well, go ahead and do that. And
That's such a crappy thing to do.
Like, he pushes all the responsibility on Liquid.
Yes, he puts all the responsibility of look, I here's the rule. But if they just want to ignore the rule, man, like, sure, why not? Just go ahead and ask them. It's no big deal. They should say yes. And then so Liquid is like, no, you know, the rule is a kill's recorded. The round counts. We don't want to replay the round because clearly they won. And, you know, money's up for grabs. Why, you know, I guess, and this is where our discussion was going to be, is where does the etiquette in esports count? You know, is there etiquette in the sense of should Liquid have replayed the round? A part of me says yes, because it's kind of a dirty move because you know it was an accident. But then And then a part of me also says, if the rule says that killer's recorded, round counts, well then, I mean, that's the rule. So
And the thing that really bothered me is the CEO of RGN, which by the way stands for Reliable Gaming Network. I just thought that was pretty funny. The CEO totally threw Liquid under the bus and said, hey, we gave Liquid the option. Basically, once again, took all the responsibility off his tournament, put it on Liquid. LG's owner, Steve Maida, was even going as far as to say, like, oh, it was some random person who wasn't even supposed to be up there. I have no idea why he was on the stage. that turned their computer off, completely uninformed about the situation, making comments on it. And then, like, the Liquid co-owner basically being like, he should have never told my guys, like, that was our decision, which I totally stand behind. It was just a mess all around.
Because ultimately, it wasn't their decision. The decision was
and then you get in the rules. And then afterwards, you get into the whole handshaking thing. Like, Liquid says they didn't shake hands. Luminosity says we were here to shake hands, but you never came over to us. And
thus
drama.
The drama continues to where, and then you have the Brazilian fans just blowing up Hiko's Twitter constantly, and it's just, it's really becoming probably into a bigger mess than what it really should have been. And if anything, the best thing for it is the fact that San Jose did happen so soon afterwards.
Oh, people forgot about it in a minute.
Like, it was over. To even think that this only happened like 4 or 5 days ago seems insane, because it really does seem like weeks ago this was even a discussion.
Yeah, it was done before, yeah.
So I think everyone is kissing made up on that front there. Do you have anything else for us on the micro, sir?
That's it. Let's do it.
Awesome. That about does it for the show. The Center Ring episode 10 is in the books. Thank you so much for listening. If you listened all the way through, thank you even more. Again, my name is Tim. Co-host is Brandon. My Twitter is at Pirate Mushroom. Your Twitter is
at Brand PGN.
Still haven't changed it, huh?
I'm kind of like, I say it every episode now.
Yeah, okay. You, for the 10 people that listen, I think you can change your Twitter account. The show's Twitter, on that note, is at The Center Ring. Be sure to follow us. That way you can get all the latest show notes, know when latest episodes are up, all the news on that. Tell your friends, tell your family about us. Share us on Reddit.
You can find all the episodes at tcr.gg.
Yep, you can find...
Past and present.
Past and present. Maybe even future. You can also find all the links for our Twitter. We have slowly but surely, we're getting a YouTube, we're getting a Twitch, we're getting all of that essential stuff that is required to be relevant in today's world. Slowly but surely, as our schedules allow it. So again, thank you so much for listening to The Center Ring. We will be back next week talking a little DreamHack Winter. Until then, good luck and have fun.